Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
An outstanding harpist and recording artist, Yolanda Condonasis, has been a guest before here on Crossover. However, today is a very special day because we'll speak about something she believes in deeply, the environment and its preservation. Where others discuss, Yolanda does. And she has established a foundation, Earth at Heart, which was created to inspire awareness through the arts of the environment. Welcome back to Crossover, Yolanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we are so proud of you as a fine, fine harpist and a great recording artist, but also because I found it fascinating your commitment to the environment and what you're doing in your own way to do something about it. How did that all come about?
Well, you know, I've been playing harp for a pretty long time, a few decades now, and I think probably everybody gets to the point in their life and or career where you know, you start looking around and wondering what more you can do. And I think this project, which was a book and a nonprofit organization called Earth at Heart that I founded, sort of evolved rather slowly, I would say, over about the last decade. And it really started with an album of music by Alan Hovhaannis that I did about 10 years ago. And there was a piece on the album called The Spirit of Trees. And I was, you know, quite interested in earth causes and earth conservation at that point, but not in a very intense way. And for some reason, I thought to myself, you know, maybe we can do a royalty funnel to a really good organization that works on rainforest conservation. So I did a little research and happened onto this wonderful organization called the Rainforest Alliance, which now is quite a well-known organization. And was able to arrange through my label, Telarc, to have a portion of my royalty from that album just sent directly to the Rainforest Alliance. And it really felt good to do something, albeit a small thing. And it just kind of led one thing to another in terms of my involvement and my learning about what's going on. And I think, as most people do when it comes to this cause, really any cause, but when it comes to the earth, I think the more you learn, the more you research, the more you find out, the more people you talk to, the more you truly realize that this is a very, very urgent problem. This is not something that we can sit around and contemplate for a number of years and then figure out what to do. We really all need to do whatever it is we can do. And everybody has different talents. Everybody brings different contribution to the table, whether it's money or time or effort or even just learning about it and doing what little you can in your own household. We all absolutely have to get on this wagon.
Have you run into any political conflict there, because this is an issue that spurs a lot of political rhetoric, that it's not really what it seems to be, or the people are saying? Have you had any experience with that?
Well, I think, like so many political issues, the argument can be twisted to illustrate just about any point. And I'm relatively unconcerned about that. I feel that there are enough things about this problem that are unequivocally verifiable, whether the terminology or, you know, there are a few people that question the science of some of the conclusions. I think those people usually have a reason to disagree. And I think we can't sit around and contemplate the fact that, oh, well, it might not be as bad as we think, or this conclusion, you know, might not be my conclusion. I think all of that is just basically a handicap to going in and doing what we can about what we we can all agree about.
And believe in and certainly have an opportunity to contribute to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, whether or not we can all agree on the term global warming or climate change or the causes for that or, you know, the nature of the problem, I think what's going on in the Gulf right now is proof enough that there are so many issues wrapped up in this problem and in this cause that, you know, gosh, if you don't agree with that, here's something else we can agree on.
Well,
let's do something about that.
And, well, it's wonderful to hear you speak this way. And it's what I'm most fascinated with is that you became so emotionally involved. And I think it's the kind of an issue that you do. And playing the harp, believe it or not, the harp is so very much an organic instrument. Mm-hmm. It's very mechanical, but there's an organic thing about it that just gets to you. And as a harpist, playing it, you sense the strings and the vibrations and the wood and all of these wonderful things that make the sound of the instrument. So,
well, yeah, the harp is made of the earth.
Yes.
There's not much about the harp that is, you know, fabricated and artificial. And you know, I really do believe in karma. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, what you put out comes back to you. And what I want to do with this is inspire people to do something about this cause by a different means than statistics and information and paragraphs of information that you know, this is also important and we must learn about the nuts and bolts of the problem. But my nonprofit organization called Earth at Heart is, the mission of the organization is to inspire earth awareness and literacy and passion through the arts. And I just so believe that when you tap into people's sensibility that responds to the arts, that responds to a wonderful piece of music or an amazing piece of visual art or a powerful dance piece or anything, you know, anything that responds to that part of the brain, mm-hmm. I think you get an openness and an inspiration that perhaps you don't get with words and facts and science and urging.
Well, of course, this is the manifestation of what we think, the art, the artistry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so, it's a subliminal level,
yes.
too.
But now you also, you have a child or you have children?
Right. Well, I have one daughter.
One daughter.
And
you wrote a book, I mean, for children, isn't that right?
I did. And you know, so much of this, there have been so many factors that have increased my passion about this cause. And probably the biggest one of all is my daughter, who is, you know, just a bundle of everything wonderful. And she has really taught me so much. And just by the mere fact of being here, she has given me a different awareness about what our mission here on Earth needs to be. And really, it all boils down to whether or not we're making music or we're building skyscrapers or trying to assist in a cause that's important to us. We're all trying to leave a better spot than we found.
So you wrote this book. This is a children's book. It's called
Our House is Round. Right.
Yeah, which of course
right.
is the
And
earth,
that,
yeah.
the idea of the book came from really wanting something like that to read to my daughter. And thinking, you know, when my daughter was about six or so, I thought, she's almost eight now. And when she was about six, I thought, you know, I really would like to present this material to her in an understandable and a really attractive visual way so that, you know, I still remember the pictures in my favorite books. And I thought, oh, this will be easy to find. And I scoured the bookstores, I scoured the internet, I scoured everything I could find to find a book that was targeted at this age group, really like around K through 3, grade 3, and I could not find it. Mm-hmm. And so I also needed something like this for my nonprofit for Earth at Heart to accompany some school curriculum kits we were putting together. And so it kind of gave birth to the idea, well, gosh, I can't find it. Perhaps I need to create it. And the idea of Our House is Round as a title just comes from, I think, the first thing you have to address when you're teaching children about this problem is the global connection, the idea that what we do in Kansas affects people in China, and how we're all related, and just because we don't live next to a factory, just because we don't, you know, our bed is not on a highway with pollution, just because we don't live in the middle of the ocean, doesn't mean that the problems that are existing in these places don't affect us.
And of course, the earth is our house.
Right, yes. Right. And
now, is you have a website for your Earth at Heart organization?
Well, actually, right now the website we've been concentrating on is for Our House is Round, and the URL is our www.ourhouseisroundonline.com, and talks a lot about the book, how it came to be, how to get it, and what the proceeds will go to. And
so that's you can go to the internet site.
Yes, ourhouseisroundonline.com.
Ourhouseisroundonline.com.
Right. And, you know, with this book, I thought it was also so important to have pictures in the book that really were fine art pictures. So much of what is out there right now for kids is cartoon and computer created, and, you know, kids are starting to get used to those sorts of images.
Yes, of course.
As art. And each one of the almost 50 pages in this book, it's very much a picture book for kids, but each one of these pages is a hand-created watercolor. And it's so vivid, and the artist that I got to work with me on this project is a very young, very creative person named Daphne Knox. And she just completely got what I was going for in absolutely every frame. And the idea is to create really gorgeous visual images to go with the ideas, kind of bringing back the idea of Earth at Heart and inspiring understanding through artistic means.
So this then is available at ourhousesroundonline.com.
Right.
And also now we also would like to talk to you a little bit about your album, which was released a while ago, not terribly long ago. It was 2008, I think.
Right.
Air. And of course, I know the music that you have on this is absolutely, well, it's impressionistic in many cases. Takemitsu is more contemporary, but certainly WC. And this is the kind of music that just you can't help but think about nature when you're listening to it. And is that the reason that you...
The parallel works of Claude Debussy and Toru Takemitsu, and the title just seemed to make it a no-brainer that this, the album as well as the book, should relate to environmental causes. And I partnered with Oberlin Conservatory on this album, and both of us funnel money to an organization called the Environmental Defense Fund from this album. And it's done, you know, really, really well. And a lot of people have enjoyed it, and a lot of people have really been moved to think about the earth through this music. One of the pieces is called And Then I Knew 'Twas Wind.
Yes, that's lovely.
And based on a line of poetry by Emily Dickinson. And it's just so... I guess the best word I can think of is just subliminally inspiring. And it is a contemporary work, but so very impressionist in its tone that it's also a wonderful introduction to contemporary music.
Yes,
for someone who may say, oh, I don't like contemporary music, but, oh, this is such a fusion of world culture and Asian sonorities and Impressionist sonorities and something new altogether, that it just seems actually a radio DJ once told me not too long ago that it just seemed to have a direct line straight to your subconscious, this piece.
Now, this album is Air,
mm-hmm.
and is this also something that one can get on the web?
Yes. You can get the Air CD on the website ourhousesround.online.com. You can get a little combo pack with both the book and the CD, or you can get it from my website, which is yolandaharp.com, or you can get it from anywhere else, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon, any of the online.
Now, if it's purchased somewhere else, do you still get a certain amount sent to the organization?
Absolutely. Yes. It's all purchased, from and through my label, Telarc, and all the royalty issues are handled directly through them. So no matter where you get it, your money will still will still help out environmental causes.
Well, Yolanda, to be prosaic, you're a breath of fresh air. So, speaking environmentally, really are. And it's very heartening to hear someone as dedicated, and it's genuine. I mean, it's really from the heart. It is Earth at heart, from your heart. And I would say it's very inspiring to hear you speak this way, and, of course, to listen to your beautiful
music. Thank you so much. And you know, really, in the scheme of things, this is such a very, very minute thing that I'm doing. But at the very least, you know, it might cause someone to think about these issues in a way they might not have before. And you know, this is what I can do, and everybody can do something.
And we appreciate it. And you certainly have achieved something by doing this. So thank you once again, Yolanda. And hopefully we'll be speaking with you, well, in the near future, let's say, about another album that you will be bringing out.
So. Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thanks
it's always
again.
Such a pleasure to talk with
thank
you.
Thank you, dear.
Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
Welcome, George Fenton.
Thank you so much.
You are a multi Grammy, Ivor, Novello, I guess all kinds of awards for your film music and for some of the films that I have seen that I've loved so very, very much. But I was amazed to read about you and find out that you had started life as an actor. Wasn't that the way you started?
Well, yes, I began definitely, I had an ambition to be an actor, and the first job I ever had for which I was paid, I did speak on the stage. So in that way, I did begin as an actor, but in that same production, I also played, I played the music as well. So I'm an actor monkey, really. But I had a ticket. I had an equity ticket, and I did appear in a few things. And I began in the theater, and it's the theater that I, in a way, love most. And I would have been very happy if I could have been an actor.
Well, the point is here that you are a composer, and I have a great deal of respect for film composers, and we validated that film music really is good stuff. You know, through the years, it's been kind of frowned upon, and it is a very, very special craft. And I think that what you have done, I've looked at your list of films, and some of them, most of them, are some of my favorites. One of my favorites was the 84 Charing Cross Road, believe. Was that the one with Anne Bancroft and Anthony Hopkins?
Yes.
Yeah. One of the most precious films. And then all of the biggies like Gandhi and Cry Freedom and The Jewel in the Crown. And they're all very, very different. I mean, your style is very, very different. Now, you've been doing a rather exciting project with music that you wrote for a BBC award-winning documentary, Planet Earth. Is that part of a trilogy?
It is. It's part of a trilogy. The third part has yet to be written.
Inspiration.
But hopefully it's a trilogy, yes.
Yes. Well, now, that would, I think, Are you intimidated by Gustav Holst at all?
I'm intimidated by virtually everybody, actually.
Well, he kind of defined the planets.
He did, yes.
But he was way ahead, too. I mean, you know, and now you will be appearing at the Man with, I guess, this, is it the blue planet?
Planet Earth.
The planet Earth, that's right. Well, the blue planet is, that was the first part, is that
right? Yeah,
the
blue planet was the first one, and in a way, the concert that I'm doing was spawned by the blue planet, because just after I finished the blue planet, the orchestra that recorded it asked me to do a concert of it. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do the concert, it would be a shame not to try and devise the concert with pictures as well. And so I did that, and I've had a fantastically good time doing that concert all around the world.
Well, you won an Emmy for the music, and this Classical Brit Award, is that the same?
Yes, for Planet Earth. Yes.
So it's really these segments that you're writing, I guess, parts, and all together they form this larger whole. So how does this work when you go to the concert? You have film footage, right?
Yeah. What happens in this case is that I put, because obviously Planet Earth is 11 hours long, so taking the material out is quite a complicated process, because what I did was start with the music. In other words, try and find, edit, reorchestrate, and collect, as it were, the music from all 11 hours that I could play as items in a concert. And generally they were from the sections, or I recut the picture sections with the people at the BBC to make the evening the best representation of the best bits of Planet Earth. And the way that it works is it's on a huge screen, and
yes,
the orchestra play underneath the screen, just in a way like a silent movie, and except that because each item has a different story, we play in items, and in between or before each one, I just briefly say what it is we're going to play for, and why we're playing that.
Now, when you say you play, so you have a live orchestra there?
Yep, and just like the movies, and I just conduct to the picture.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like silent movies, which are,
yes,
it's a big thing now,
yes,
coming back.
and it's fun, and I think it's different. You know, people sometimes say, well, what's the difference between that and watching it at home? But the difference is that the show or the concert, whichever way you like to, is constructed in a different way. So a lot of the stories are compressed. Things that were spread over an entire hour,
right,
are compressed.
Mm-hmm.
That it's sort of faster moving. There's a couple of items that are new to it. There's some music that's new to it, and so on. It's got its own little arc, you know. And
mm-hmm.
But I think more than that, because there's no narration, and it's just music and pictures,
uh-huh,
and a few sound effects, but mainly music and pictures, on a scale that you can't see anywhere else, and seen as a collective thing, that I found so far anyway, that it's a very good way for people to sort of emotionally engage with the material in a way that I think people can't when they're being given the information as the material goes along.
I wondered, if do you address the issue of the Earth just there in space?
I do. In the concert, well, I sort of do in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We begin that way, yeah.
We're just kind of hanging there in infinity.
We are, but we're hanging in we're hanging, as it happens, at a very special angle.
Mm, yes.
As a result of, they think, a cosmic collision.
Yes, yes.
So, so we begin. Yeah, we begin that way. If the subtext to your question is, have I tried to write the planet myself? No.
But he had a whole attitude. I mean, I believe he wrote that it wasn't World War I kind of starting at that time, that there was a cynicism that he felt as well when he wrote that the times were changing. I'm speaking to you about something that I know nothing about in terms of the music for this work, but I would imagine that it was a whole new experience for you.
No, you're completely right, and also in part what you said about film, it is correct in the sense that the Blue Planet, which was the first one, came along at a very fortunate time for me, but at that time I was almost exclusively working in Los Angeles, and I just thought I would do it because it would make a nice change, because it was a sort of slightly longer project than the normal time frame of a film. I thought it would be also in some ways more relaxing to do than the kind of hothouse environment of finishing a movie. So that was really my motivation. You know, I don't know really why, but both things, the Blue Planet and now Planet Earth, have just, in musical terms, given me amazing opportunities.
Yes.
You know, apart from anything else, because they have both turned into concert programs.
That's a whole new experience
me a chance to go around and, you know, particularly, I mean, this trip, you know, to play with some of the country's greatest orchestras, not least Philadelphia, and that in itself is
yes.
a huge thrill for me. So, I sort of feel blessed that I made that choice and the way that it's delivered so much to me personally.
Well, isn't life wonderful? I mean, you know, as an artist, you reach a point where you think, you kind of, where am I going next? And then something happens and it changes your life.
Yeah,
virtually.
Definitely.
And I think you hear that even when you read about great composers who have reached the nadir and something happens and all of a sudden they produce a great work. This has changed your life in that way, where it has offered you the experience of working with great musicians and playing your music and seeing it come to life and meeting, I guess, people around wherever you travel, around the world.
And learning, you know, by the way, I mean, the other thing that's been really great for me is that I've learned a lot about a subject that I knew nothing about, natural history, which I find absolutely fascinating.
And opening up new worlds, because that is a whole other direction.
Yeah. And I think all of those things, you know, if you do write, whatever you write for a living or paint or whatever you do, that whatever those experiences are, they're bound to impact on you in a way that they shape you going forward, you know. So when I do films now, and hopefully will do more, I think that all of this will, it's all positive energy, you know.
There's a reason for everything.
Yeah, you know, you're grateful. Well, you know what I mean. It's good if there's, yes, there's a reason for everything.
I guess. And, well, once again, I look forward to seeing you and, you know, going there and seeing the performance. But thank you so much for sharing with us here on Crossover your thoughts and your inspiration and your creativity, certainly. I mean, there's so much to ask you about, but once again, a pleasure, and I appreciate the time
much. Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.